Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We could leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number 9, let my lies, feline, with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Welcome to the show. I want to thank Will Kunkel for joining Lance in filling in for John Granato. Will Kunkel will be part of the station going forward. He'll, at least for as long as he wants to, he'll do stuff for us with the Texans. He'll go out to games. He does that with the Astros as well. So nice to have Will Kunkel here. And once again, thank him for joining us. So we got a new member of the team, and if you follow him on Twitter, you know he's out and about around the city covering everything, so he provides plenty of good content. We're happy to have him here with us. I don't know how often he stays up to watch Astros in Sacramento, apologies, Sacramento, when he doesn't have to show up to do this in the morning. Like, you know, if it's a Monday night and he doesn't have to get up early, are we staying up to watch the Astros versus the A's? Maybe through the first 5 innings, but once it's a foregone conclusion that the Astros are winning, you kind of tune out. You know what? I can go to bed now. Nothing's going to change here. It's just the A's.
You think in the back of Will's mind, he was like, it had to be the day that I have to wake up at 6 in the morning to get there. Yeah. There's also a A's Astros game that starts at 9. It's like,
it's just
can this been an East Coast game?
Bad timing.
Yeah, finishes up around 8:30.
Like, he goes to the games at a Daikin, so that probably wouldn't have been preferable. That's not great to have to spend a night out at Daikin, then go home and come here. But like,
East Coast road game,
an East Coast road game in New York wraps up whenever it wraps up. Get a good night's sleep, come in here and carry Lance for 3 hours.
I was going to say, and then walks in, he's like getting crumbs on his face because Lance is looking at him while he's talking.
He's lucky he kept his distance, and today no donut crumbs because Joe didn't bring in donuts. I do think Will got a taste of the lack of professionalism around here, if he didn't already know from listening, because Lance had a live spot. You guys might have noticed it as we were closing out the show, and there was a little delay. Because despite the fact that Lance made the decision to do that live spot at that time, he did not recognize that it was his time to start speaking. So Will heard and noticed me banging furiously on the glass to get Lance's attention. Do your live! Do your live! So he's no longer a Fox 26, but he probably recognizes there's a level of professionalism between TV and what we do here. There's a giant gulf, like the gulf between the A's and the Astros.
Yeah, at least how... I'll say one member of the – actually two members of the morning show get down. He's filling in for one of the two members.
That's true.
I think he got thrown straight into the – wait, this is how you guys
this
do things?
This is how you do this thing? Hall of Famers. Man. That's the remarkable story that they overcame all those things to become Hall of Famers.
Or it's like the stories you hear about, like, wait, Wade Boggs would drink how much and then be a Hall of Famer?
So what do you think? You've been around – these two long enough to see how they operate. Do you think it's a credit to them that they overcame all the things that they are about to make the Hall of Fame? Or do you think it's a story of not reaching your potential? Because considering their lack of professionalism in making the Hall of Fame, what could they have been if they approached it in a different way?
That is true. That is true. I thought you were going to say, are they just compiled? They just stayed in the
stat
league.
Compilers? They just been around
stayed
long
in the league
enough?
Long enough to get the 3,000 hits.
Yeah, all right, Biggios. A bunch of Biggios is what you're saying?
I didn't say that.
No.
I didn't say
I imply
Biggio.
That's what you're saying, but I said it. That's true. That's true. But the team that Biggio plays for and sometimes is around, he's less involved than Jeff Bagwell. They won another game yesterday. They beat up on the A's, and one of the better trades that they appear to have made in the last couple years continues to work out. Now, Wesneski's not available, but Paredes, of course, his value is pretty clear. And then Cam Smith is the one that people are, at least on social media, losing their minds over because he has played really well, particularly in the last 30 games. That's a win currently. I know someone at some point, if they haven't already done it, I'm sure they already have, we asked the questions if the Astros have won that trade. I think that can't really be determined until we find out if the Cubs are even going to bring back Kyle Tucker. But Cam Smith with another three hits yesterday. He's had a big couple of days in Sacramento. Had the home runs, had the three hits yesterday. Now that average, it's not the biggest thing when it comes to baseball, but it's, you know, when we were growing up, you look at the batting average on the back of a baseball card. How good is this guy? We used to determine that by batting average. Cam Smith's over 270 now. He, as I said, he's had a big day, a big couple days in Sacramento, as most of the Astros hitters have had outside of game one, where they are shut down and lost with the walk-off. So, Dana Brown, we won't give you a full win, but good eye noticing Cam Smith. I know he was the best prospect in the Cubs organization. Didn't take a lot to recognize how good he could be. But if you look at him right now, he's got over the last 30 games, Cam Smith's got a batting average over 330. He's got two home runs, which happened the last couple of days, 16 RBIs. And there are other numbers that are more advanced stats, but some of the basics has 11 doubles over the last 30 games as well. So nice to have him out there in right field. Not been a problem defensively. And he's given you all that you could ask for. The marked improvement since his first month and a half or so to what he is now. Guy's good. All you can say right now. Good decision to put him out there. And, of course, if that bat continues to be hot, he'll get more and more opportunities to just be your everyday right fielder. We kind of already think that's going to happen, but you know, if the bat and production fluctuates, he may lose out on at bats. But right now, there's no reason not to have him out there as many days as he can take. And as I said, it is just the A's, and that helps. But they all count the same, and he's doing a really good job. And so are the Astros, as they now officially have the second best record in the American League, which, considering the makeup of the team to begin and throwing all the injuries and the lack of production from Yordan before he got hurt, a big credit to them. I'm certainly surprised by what they've been. And isn't it that their schedule just keeps getting softer as far as the rest of the way?
I know, at least for the rest of the first half of the season, like till the All-Star break, they have, I think, like by far the easiest schedule in the league. So, yeah, it was a little bit of like, well, they got through the hard part. They got injured, and they still have the number two record in the American League. So, I there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic now. Just because you got a bunch of injuries to start the season doesn't mean
you're done with injuries.
You're done. Yeah. Yes, not doesn't mean you're going to get healthier. Maybe you just net out to even with the guys you get back versus guys you continue to lose, but you can feel good, and at the very least, you feel good about how your rookie right fielder, who's playing right field for the first, like, whatever, 60 times of his life, this in Major League Baseball games, how he's progressing.
Is right field not important? We always thought defensively, or just Cam Smith's just a really good athlete. I just assumed, maybe wrongfully, that it was going to be a tougher transition.
Look, the joke, if you're a big leaguer, you
can figure some stuff out.
It's not
shortstop, is what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. Left field, another one. And they
I don't want to see Jake Myers
playing
shortstop.
Yes.
Although he's left-handed, so he wouldn't. But still.
Yeah, I mean, the jokes we made early, less about Cam Smith, more about Altuve, because
Altuve, why is Altuve out there? That is more speculative than a What's Cam Smith? 22? 23? Yeah.
You would just assume Altuve entrenched at second. What are we doing? Franchise legend, all the intangibles that go into it. The Astros would tell you, we're not thinking about all that stuff. He is not a good defensive second baseman. We're going to throw him out in a spot where there's less chances of him screwing things up.
Yeah.
If the screw-ups will be more embarrassing, misplaying a ball, diving and missing one, that stuff, that's more embarrassing, but it measures out, it nets out to, we'd rather have him screw up there, three times?
In 70 games of the season?
Yeah, in 70 games, then not having the range to get someplace, throwing a ball away at second because he's trying to make a play. And we scoffed at it because this show scoffs at everything. But so far, playing out where we're right on this.
Yes, they're right on the basics. However.
Oh, you've got a however.
It's just this is 100% hindsight of just DiCenzo and Smith being as good as they are. When they moved him to left field, it was Myers and McCormick.
True.
It was Myers, McCormick, and then it's like, oh, Altuve.
Turns out Cam Smith was ready.
Turns out Zach DiCenzo was ready.
It's true.
And now it's they kind of have corner outfielders. They need a second baseman.
Brendan Rodgers just went on the IL, right?
Brendan Rodgers, yeah. I think oblique, was it?
Yeah, I think
he got hurt in the batting cages. I know that.
The Astros, I know they probably don't lead the league in getting hurt when they're not actually playing, but there's a lot of them.
They got to be up there.
Lance McCullers, Eric Eddy, Brendan Rodgers. I'm sure there's more that I'm not thinking of. They just lead at least those guys. Eric Eddy, I guess, was doing baseball activities because he was on a baseball field when he got hit by a ball.
But he was like,
but he wasn't
standing
he
in
was
the outfield
standing around
as batting
as ball
practice
hit him.
Was
he
going.
Wasn't. The reason he got hurt wasn't because he was doing baseball stuff.
No,
he was just around.
He got hit by a baseball.
Yeah, he was around baseball stuff. Lance was working out. That's why his foot is sprained, and now Brendan Rodgers was not actually playing the game of baseball, at least officially, and then he gets hurt as well. So we'll see what they do at second base. How many more times will Altuve have to play second because of what you have said about the corner outfielders that they have, and also they've got an opening there.
Yeah, and who knows? Maybe one of these guys comes back to earth and it all, works itself out. But it is just the reason that they did it. It's kind of like, kind of need a bat at second base, and you have a Hall of Fame second baseman playing left field for the first time.
Yeah.
But I mean, ultimately, I'm not even complaining about it. It's just funny how it worked out.
It has worked out for him, and Dubon hit another home run yesterday. Pena continues to stay hot. He had three hits, and you take that one 11-4.
Pena is probably the biggest reason that they're second best record in the AL.
His emergence. It's funny to say that about a former World Series MVP, but his emergence this year as a real force at the plate, and of course he made he's made a great plays all year.
Oh,
he had the Derek Jeter throw.
Yeah, the one last night was
insane. Me, not a baseball guy, can recognize. That's nuts, what he just did. That's nuts. He's got that in his bag. And the bat's there. He has been, as we talked about, your team MVP so far. And it's not close as he's having his best year as a pro. We got Jeremy Pena, all-star watch. Not something I thought we'd have a real discussion about at any point. Now it's just a lock. The guy's an all-star. So credit to Jeremy Pena for that. And the Astros, Fromber's on the mound. Fromber, fine. Six innings, the two runs, enough. Don't need to be spectacular against the A's. You do your thing. Get out of there with under 100 pitches and let Dubon and Hernandez close it out. And they did well. Dubin was fine. Hernandez, not so much, but whatever. It's 11-2 at the time, whatever it was. Just get out of the game. Just get us out of here, and that's what he did. So 11-4, nice bounce back from the first loss of the series, and now they got a chance to take 3 out of 4 with the game today. As it'll be Colton Gordon, who, considering what the Astros generally get out of their guys, particularly against a bad ball club, I just expect them to be fine as they try to take 3 out of 4. Another late night game. It'll start at 9 here, so maybe the Astros have this thing done for most of you by 10:40, and you can go to bed. Some of you probably have earlier bedtimes than that, but here's hoping that by the time you actually say enough's enough, that game's well in hand as well. That's just a product of watching your team play West Coast baseball. Okay, if you want to get in on anything, you can. 713-780-3776. We had a caller call into the earlier show, said he wanted to get back in. He wanted to talk about Jalen Williams, the recent 40-point dropper, Jalen Williams, and whether he could win Finals MVP. I haven't really considered it very much. I got to actually go look at his stats to see if that's even in the realm of possibility. We know the odds-on favorite is Shea to do it. I don't know even how close it is. I guess Jalen Williams, if he's spectacular. Actually, what would it take? If this goes seven, we've got game six tonight, Halliburton's questionable. If Jalen Williams is great in game six and they lose, and he's great again in game seven and they win, and Shea's average the rest of the way, and by average for Shea, I'm talking like 25, 5 and 5, whatever the numbers are, which would be spectacular, but just average for him. Would that be enough for Jalen Williams? We'll talk about that when we come back and other things. I think Sean was clickety-clacking in there looking up some stats, but we'll talk about that when we come back. We'll hear from another pundit, this time talking about C.J. Stroud. And C.J. Stroud's second year has been up for debate. Did he have a good year? Did he have a bad year? Was he simply a product of his environment, just like any troubled child? Was he a product of his environment last year? Or was he the actual problem? I don't know. C.J. may be one of the more Teflon young stars in all of football. A lot of it is being considered infrastructure as far as why he was not as good as he was in year one. We'll talk about that. And we'll get into some other things as well as we're just getting started here. Me and Sean, till noon, we will be back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So after a quick glance at the numbers between the Thunder's two best players, and we'll get to the C.J. Stroud stuff at some point here as well, but the question came up, listener called in and wanted to talk about, if you are still listening, certainly call in about this, whether it could be a surprise and could Jalen Williams win Finals MVP. Of course, the Finals has the game tonight, hasn't even been decided yet as far as whether OKC will win it, but they're on that path, particularly if Tyrese Halliburton will be unavailable or even just limited tonight as he's dealing with his injury. Sean pointed out during the break as we started looking at the numbers that really – well, it's game one and game two, but particularly game one is going to really knock Jalen Williams out of any real consideration. Also because Shea has four 30-point games in the series and his worst game of the season, of the series, a game they lost, he scored 24-8-4 on nearly 50% shooting. That's a bad game for him. That's the bad game. All the other games, 38, 34, 35, 31. So while Jalen Williams has played great over the last three games, 26-27 in the 40-piece, and now he's getting comps to Jordan while Shea's he's getting comps to Pippen while Shea's getting comps to Jordan. How many times did Pippen win a Finals MVP? None. That's the quote-unquote problem when you're playing with Jordan.
Yeah.
He's Jordan. He'll always outshine you. And no, this is not me comparing Shea to Jordan. That's just when you have the.
We're calling Jalen Williams better than Pippen.
That's what we're doing. When you have the big time scorer who can also defend, and then you have a guy who's calling card as defense in Jalen Williams, but also is a big time scorer as well. Though probably more different eras, guy shoots the ball more, whatever. Probably a more talented offensive player than young Pippen. Because we're talking about late 20s, 30s, in their 30s when the Bulls started getting it done. So whether the comp is correct or not, that's up for you. If you didn't watch basketball when it was on NBC, you may think Shea is better than Jordan. That's just how things go generationally.
Can I raise my hand
and say you didn't and you don't?
Yeah, I didn't watch NBC on or NBA on NBC. didn't watch Jordan win any of his titles.
Yeah. And you don't.
Shay, I'm not ready to call him Jordan yet.
Okay, look at you. Just going out on a limb. Congratulations.
If we're not ready to call LeBron Jordan, I think we can wait on Shay.
I'm not ready to even have Jordan and Pippen and Shay and Jalen Williams in the same Twitter post when they're making the comp. I don't even like that.
Is Shay Kobe? No.
No, he's none of them.
Not yet.
He's just Shay.
Let's
win the first title before we do any of that, honestly. But to the caller's question, it feels very unlikely. The only scenario where I see it even coming close where Jalen Williams might even get a couple votes is if this does go seven, Shea's not great in either of the next two games, and Jalen Williams is carrying the team. Yeah. And then maybe in some surprise push it goes his way. But how bad could Shay actually be in these games? Like, what are we talking about here? Like, even if he does what Jalen Williams did in game one and two, he'd get criticized immensely, but he wouldn't lose out on the MVP.
I think if he did what Jalen Williams did in
game
one,
if he goes 6-for-19 for 17 points, like, by the way, speaking of Kobe, he has one of those type of games in a closeout game when he played the Celtics. But
I think this is you're right about the – like, you basically need two stinkers and two great games from Jalen Williams.
Make this a conversation.
Going back to the 2010 finals, if the 2010 finals happened today, do you think Pau Gasol would have actually... Because that's what it feels like. We have a recent trend in basketball of just giving it to, like, you know, the second best player actually had some good games on better efficiency. So,
yeah, basketball finals.
We might give it to Pau Gasol.
Basketball final voters got some hipster in them when they're like, you know what would be cool and different? Let's do it. Let's give it to Iguodala, or give it to Jalen Brown, or maybe
Pascal Siakam won Eastern Conference Finals MVP. I don't think people know that because
no one cares about that award.
Yes, but it's also like, wait, what?
Yeah,
why? I get that he probably averaged more points per game than Tyrese Haliburton, but if you watch the Pacers,
you
like
know who Tyrese is the Haliburton, most valuable player,
the guy who makes it happen. Yes. Like, I don't know why. I don't know why we're so hipster about this. We're
just give
Steph
it
Curry didn't win Finals MVP until his fourth one.
Just give it to the best player. Well, no, Kevin Durant's on the roster, so you get it. But he shouldn't have lost Finals MVP to Andre Iguodala because Andre Iguodala was defending LeBron James.
He had a 30-point triple-double.
Yeah, if you remember from that series, LeBron James was just fine in that series, by the way.
He made him work for it, and that's what got him MVP.
Yeah, the biggest problem for LeBron wasn't Andre Iguodala. The fact that Dellavedova was someone he had to depend on because Kyrie was hurt.
And Mozgov. Mozgov.
What, Kevin Love was hurt in that series, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, so those are his problems, not Iguodala being on him for possessions in the first and second half of that series.
I just think it's interesting, and the Jalen Williams thing, like, listen, he's had three great games, the last three games of the finals. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, like you said, has had, what, four of the five games?
Yes, and even five wasn't bad. His worst game was better than any of Jalen Williams, the two games that we're questioning to keep him out of the mix. Shai's game was better than that.
Yeah, and then you throw in he's averaging 2.5 steals and almost 2 blocks.
Yeah, it's not a... I appreciate the thought experiment from the listener. You're going to need an epic Shai collapse and Jalen Williams to put up and carry the Thunder in a game 6 and 7 for it to go his way.
Yeah, yeah. And you do need the extra game, too.
Yes. It's part of the equation. If Shai's bad tonight and they still win because Jalen Williams is great, that's not going to be enough. You need a couple of these and probably a couple 40 pieces from Jalen Williams to get that done. Either way, we got game 6 tonight in the finals. Does it end here? The health of Haliburton's so up in the air that it's hard for me to give a definite opinion. I'm just going to assume he's limited. But can the Pacers provide one of those things where they rally the troops, you know, break out any cliche you want, circle the wagons, whatever you need to use to get there. Can they do that even with a hampered Haliburton to win a game 6? I think it's possible that energy in that crowd isn't going to be lessened because Halliburton's either limited or out. I think they will get behind T.J. McConnell. We've seen in spurts that T.J. McConnell can be an effective player. It's always going to be, can he do that for 30, 4 or 35 minutes, however much they play him, if Halliburton isn't actually good to go. So that would be a question.
I mean,
I want to pick the Pacers because of their resiliency. I just think the Halliburton thing is too much.
Yeah, I think I'd land on they have a chance, but I wouldn't pick them.
Yeah.
Because if Halliburton is as limited as he was in Game 5.
Then he shouldn't even play.
A, yes, he shouldn't play. B, it was 95-93 with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Like they got pretty close to.
Siakam knocks down a three. Yeah, 95-93. Yeah.
They made him work for it. Even it was 7 points with 7 minutes left, and then that's when the Thunder went on the run to close it out. But they basically were 7 minutes away from being in another one of those buzzer beater type scenarios that the Pacers have found themselves
now,
in.
Ironically, the guy who was knocked down that buzzer beater was the reason they didn't get to that spot because of how poor he was.
Yeah, so I mean, if you just want to go like, hey, home game, maybe you get a better, you know, whatever, Obi Toppin or something. Like, you get better from some of the role guys. Like, there's definitely a path that they can still win, but win this game. But I think it's so it's going to be super hard without unhobbled Halliburton.
Yeah.
I'm not even saying like full health. Just
can he
like
get to
one
be
80%?
Is he even good enough to get to that level and play with just a couple days off? We'll go to break with that, and I'll leave you with this. Has nothing to do with the NBA, but now I'm all in on Houston getting a hockey team, NHL team. I didn't really care one way or the other. Hey, if they come, they come, whatever. But the fact that the Dallas Stars have a hashtag that's hashtag Texas Hockey, and then they have a little Dallas Star logo next to it, that's enough. All right, out. No.
We got to make this right.
We got to change. Yeah, things have to change. Let's go, Gary Bettman. Let's get it done. Tillman, whoever needs to get it done, get it done. Because the fact that the Stars can just get away with Texas Hockey and it has their logo next to it, it's some reporter talking about some deal. Of course, my algorithm has hockey stuff on it now because I was taking a hard look at Panthers Oilers over the last couple weeks. So now stuff is popping up. I've never heard of Matt Duchene before or Frank Severilli, the guy reporting about his extension from hashtag Texas Hockey. But now let's go. We need a hockey team just to change that hashtag. It needs to change. It's ridiculous. You don't represent us. I know we had the caller call in a couple weeks ago saying they're a Texas team. We should be talking Stars. Look, that's a very, very narrow-casted way to do a show, and we do that sometimes. Mascot talk yesterday. But
that was nationwide.
Sure.
And local.
Sure.
There's three local mascots in
the
Hall of Fame.
We pointed that out. We don't need a rehash. Yes, I was there for it.
And the Delaware Blue
Hens. Thank you. And whatever the Hilltopper's name. Was it Big Red or something? Whatever that thing's name is. Either way, enough, Dallas. You don't get to just claim Texas hockey. Let's go. Let's get one. If you got to steal one from Canada, I don't care. We do that all the time.
They're not using them.
Southern teams.
They're not winning anything up there.
Yeah, we do that all the time. Southern teams take hockey teams from other places all the time. Sometimes we give them back, but let's take them.
The North Stars?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We do that, and sometimes we give them back. Now they're the Minnesota Wild, whatever they are. But either way, beat it. Dallas. All right. I rarely get into the Dallas-Houston thing, but now that I've watched enough hockey and I've watched the Panthers already damage the Stanley Cup, I'm in the mode of saying, F you, Dallas. I saw how Calgary people treat Edmonton fans. They were laughing their asses off because there's their biggest rival, and Edmonton lost again. Now I feel a certain way.
Yeah. I do think just from what I've read recently, it's more of a win than an if with the NHL coming to Houston. It is my promise that I will be the most uninformed fan of whatever the Houston hockey team is. I will not learn guys' names or whatever, but I will still be like, what the hell is this coach doing?
don't even know what a stretch pass is. But
I don't even know. Paul was dropping like forecheck. I have no idea what that is.
It's when you dump the puck into your offensive zone. Send the forwards in to harass the defenders to try to get the puck loose and get a cycle going. I've watched a lot. I'm in on it. That's what a forecheck is. It's your forwards creating havoc in your offensive end.
Is it like pressing?
Pretty much. It's a version of pressing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what it is. And you try to get the puck loose and start your offensive, whatever they call it. I don't think they call them plays. Let's get the cycle going, I think, is something they may use from time to time. All right, we'll get the Keith when we come back. He wants to talk TV. Anyone else want to talk about things we haven't mentioned at all on the show just to take us in a different direction? We welcome that. We'll talk to Keith about TV. Anyone else, you can do that as well. 713-780-3776. We will be back.
ESPN
97.5. Inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios with Del Olalea. I mean, you're not actually in the studio, but if you watch ESPN Houston's YouTube channel, it's kind of like you are. No, not really? Okay.
Just for evidence, I was busy when that rejoin gets played. I was out there making sure the John and Lance, featuring Will Kunkel podcast is ready to go. Had our intern doing a great job making sure that's up for you guys, so. Mostly it's about me not getting tweets when I wake up from a nap. Hey, the podcast isn't up. Sorry, guys. I'm at home. I got nothing to do with that.
Or it's like the wrong day or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So making sure that's good to go. So she did a great job. So that'll be up there for you guys shortly. All right, let's get to Keith. Keith wants to talk some TV. What's up, Keith?
Hey, Dale. Thanks for having me on. Two quick questions. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the entire Mission Impossible series, 8 movies. I watched all 8 in the past 2 weeks, including the Final Reckoning in theaters. I thought really enjoyed all 8 of them. I thought 6, 7, and 8 were a notch above the rest. So I want to get your thoughts on all those movies. And then second question, next week, Squid Game Final Season 3 debuts along with The Bear Season 4. Which one of those are you more excited for? Thanks.
Well, I'm going to defer to my trusty producer and the guy who recently won a spectacular college playoff semifinal over me.
Thank
you. Sean Mapes, because I don't know those movies, the Mission Impossible movies, by heart or anything. In fact, my goal is what Sean did. I'm probably going to watch all of them in a row and then watch The Final Reckoning, because just to be a real Tom Cruise head, I got to do that. Sean, you did that. You watched them all, and then you went and watched Final Reckoning.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on the series as a whole and the final movie, alleged final movie?
It's a great franchise. It is just unequivocally a great franchise. It's not as big as some of the other ones, but do they have some great movies in there. And it's really great because it's the different installments, especially early, less so the last like 3 or 4, because it's been the same director and writer for the last 4, Christian McQuarrie. But they're very episodic, so you just kind of like jump in to Ethan Hunt's life for 2.5 hours and then jump out. And then a few years later, you jump back in and it's at a completely different place. There's a different team, whatever. I actually really enjoy that. It's less like, I don't know, again, especially the early ones, like you don't really have to watch all of them. And when you're doing the rewatch, you're like, it's not necessary that I have to watch Mission Impossible 2 to get Mission Impossible 3. Like, it's completely unnecessary. But they're all great movies. All right, they're all good movies. 2, I'm not going to throw great movie at 2. It's a good movie. The end's really the best part. The beginning, you're like, what am I watching?
The
Final Reckoning's awesome, too. Tough start.
Yeah, because it just recaps the previous movie.
It's tough to rewatch all the movies and then watch Final Reckoning because the first like 20 minutes is exposition for how we got here. And you're like, yeah, there's a 2.5 hour movie I just watched that says all this stuff.
So I've watched several of them. I think I've seen them all. Maybe not two. I'd have to go back and see that one, I believe, even just for just to confirm I've seen it.
Yeah.
But I think the moment of all the movies, because sometimes you got like baggage. It doesn't always have to be bad baggage, but you have baggage with an actor you've seen in other stuff, or an actress or an actor, or whatever. When they did what they did to Carrie Russell, I was like, what the F? What? I remember being in a theater in California.
Like early.
That
the
was
movie.
Number three. Being in a theater in California watching Mission Impossible 3. And I'm like, oh, that's Carrie Russell. Love Carrie Russell.
Yeah. She's going to be in this movie?
Yeah. Always enjoy Carrie Russell on screen. I think she's in The Diplomat on Netflix. Watch that show. It's pretty entertaining. And then what happened to her? Was it Philip Seymour Hoffman who did it to her?
Yeah.
I was like, you mother. I've never been now, RIP, to.
Yep, R.I.P.
to Philip Seymour Hoffman. Never, I've been out on him since, even though it was just a movie character. What he did,
one of the greatest American actors.
This is not me being unable to acknowledge his greatness.
Okay,
much like I.
But he's a bad guy forever.
Just, yeah.
Okay.
Just because I can acknowledge Tom Brady was great, still out on him.
I mean,
what he did to Carrie Russell in that movie, nah, out. I can't believe it happened.
Yeah. Almost did it to Tom Cruise. Less important to you.
I would have been less bothered. Like, the series could have ended if Tom Cruise was dead. Or turned it into Mission Impossible, featuring Carrie Russell's character for the rest. Let her do six more movies.
She could be jumping off planes.
Yeah, I don't mind it. She played a spy.
Yeah.
In The Americans.
The first one's really good. The first one is... It might be my actual favorite of them. It's definitely the one I've seen the most, just because it was always
on,
TNT.
More. Mostly because at the very start of the movie, I thought I'm getting a lot of Carrie Russell.
Oh, yeah. It was 10 minutes
very
in?
Very early.
Maybe?
I'm pretty much here for Carrie Russell.
Yeah.
And then she's gone.
And
spoiler alert.
And the way they do it, it's very
nuts.
Cool. Very
it's
cool
very
given
cool.
2006 technology,
yeah,
they did that.
The way it's like just over, like a pop in it.
And, like, her eyeball goes crazy?
Yeah, it's nuts. All of it added to me going, hey, PSH, done with you. Done.
If Ethan Hunt doesn't get you, I will.
Yeah, someone's got to pay for this.
No, but they're honestly great movies.
Yeah. Squid Game, didn't even see season one, so can't speak to it.
Yeah. And you need to catch up on The Bear, too, right?
Yeah, it's a lot to get to. I watch a lot of TV, but as everyone knows, there's The Bear's easy, but there's so much to get to. Some things I dip in and out of. The Bear part stream. That's what streaming does. Like, I can get to this anytime I want. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah, and they make a season every year, so
yeah,
it is an easy show and not very long seasons and normally pretty short episodes. They hover around the 30-minute mark. So.
Yeah, so you're up on The Bear. You've seen them.
Yes.
All right. So I'll get to that at some point. It's one of those things I know I'm going to get to just because there's too many people in my life who reference it as far as, hey, are you going to see this? Have you seen it? So it's one of those things I'll get to. Keith, Mission Impossible movies, really good.
They're all good. They're all good.
Yeah, yes.
Some are awesome.
Look, this show will knock a lot of things. That's not something.
No, Mission Impossible, untouchable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean.
I mean, it's touchable. It's not
certainly
perfect.
Touchable,
I have my
yeah.
issues with the last
I mean,
movie.
Yeah,
Ving
Rhames is just rolling around, not doing much, but he's still in them. He gives the emotional talks to Ethan Hunt at this point.
Ethan.
I mean, you could have traded up Michelle Monaghan for Carrie Russell. That's all I'm saying. One of them could have existed for more movies.
By the way, when you watch all eight, this is another thing. You see a lot of themes repeated. A lot of dead brunettes.
What's that about?
Tom Cruise's life.
Working out some stuff with Katie Holmes. Is that what that's about?
Just a lot of.
In real life, what's that?
Like
what's
he
that
just
about?
Replaces them every couple movies.
I mean, Nicole Kidman wasn't a brunette, but Katie Holmes was. So what's that about, Tom? What are you doing? What are you up to?
That's what makes the movie great, because you can also do the psychological reading of, like, especially the more recent ones of like. What is Tom Cruise trying to say in this movie?
So he married Katie Holmes in 2006, same year that Mission Impossible 3 came out, when Carrie Russell.
Yes. And where Michelle Monaghan gets introduced.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
As his wife in this movie.
Yeah. Trying to figure some stuff out. Within yourself, Tom? Is that what that's about?
Yeah. But then in Ghost Protocol, he can't spoiler alert, he can't be with his wife. It's not a spoiler. It's the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
They have to, like, part ways so she can live a normal life while Tom Cruise saves the world.
Ghost Protocol, 2011. A divorce came in 2012, officially. So who knows when that actually all got started.
And then he replaces her with Rebecca Ferguson.
Who eventually had to go.
Gets replaced by Hayley Atwell.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy how they do
Mission Impossible, James Bond, women got in both series. Just part of the process, I guess, when you love a dangerous man. All right. We'll go to break with that. Thanks, Keith, for the call. We'll get into CJ Stroud and what people think of him. Year one was great. Year two, eh. But year one has left a giant impression on people. And really, the only person not getting criticism for year two is CJ. So we'll hear some of that in hour two. If you want to get in, you can. 713-780-3776. No Raheel today. He's got busy the last couple weeks, and he's got vacation this week. But he tells me he will be available next week. We will see if he will make fun of Sean on the air like he did in a text about Jeeps and ducks. If you missed that, Jeep Week was a month ago now, and Sean is a Jeep person. Actually, he's a person. Excuse me. Let me fix that because Sean wants it to be clear. Sean owns a Jeep.
Drives one, yes.
He is not a Jeep person.
Yes.
He simply drives one.
And Raheel does not see the
difference.
The difference.
He thinks you have rubber ducks in the front near your windshield because that's what Jeep people do. All right, we'll go to break with that. We'll be back.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own. Surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.